Good morning, everyone. Professor Teo, Wilma, the person who spoke before me, sorry I didn't catch your name. Guru, and the one in person introduced me, and everyone here. It's great to be at this university. I'm born in Potchefstroom. This is the first time I've walked into this university. What the gentleman before me spoke in the introduction was very critical in terms of the type of challenges that the country and the continent has, the emphasis on ethics and morality. In my business, we come upon people who have no morality and no ethics. The sadness about that is they interfere with people's lives and people die. We've seen that on many occasions in our research, in our relief work throughout the world. And you would think people would blame Africa for shoddy work. Strangely enough, those people who do those kind of practices come from northern countries, from what we've experienced. People try to put us down, say we are the begging nation, we carry the begging bowl, they insult us, and they take our spirit away. So much so that we don't believe in ourselves. We don't believe in our capability and the things that we can do. My presentation focuses predominantly on international projects. Those are the most difficult ones. But at the end of the presentation, you can ask me about the local projects. We're involved right now with the Cape Town drought. We're involved in setting up a big borehole in Beaufort West. We're involved in Nyasa and the fires. And from November, from August till December, we delivered 40 million rand worth of animal fodder to the farmers in Sutherland, the Northern Cape, parts of Eastern Cape and parts of Western Cape. So we're involved in a lot of different projects. But let's go to the presentation, the ethics and the morality. Gift of the Givers is a spiritual organization, not a Muslim organization, a spiritual organization. It encompasses all faiths, all creeds, all religions, all races. And I'll explain that as we go along. The story starts in 1991, August. I get sent to Istanbul, but it was because I did a project with government before Gift of the Givers. But the reason I got there was the man I met in 1986. He had moved to Pietermaritzburg. He had come from Pretoria. I had moved to Pietermaritzburg from Durban. The man was an Afrikaner. He told me, you need to go to Turkey to meet a spiritual man. He said, the spiritual man that I know, the one that he knows, he met him in America, but that man passed on in 1985. And in 1986, there was a new teacher, a new spiritual leader in Istanbul that you should meet. So I started laughing. I said, Mr. Muller, it's 1986. I still haven't seen Cape Town. When am I going to see Istanbul? He said something very important. He said, what the Almighty wills will happen. There's a time and place for everything. The time and place came in August 1901 when we moved the shipload of aid, the SAS Drakensberg. We took it from the government and we moved aid to Bangladesh for the cyclone. At that point, we arrived in Istanbul. And I was taken to a place, the leader, or one of the disciples of the spiritual master. I had to go to his house, because he came from America, he speaks English. And he sent a man with me and my wife to take us to the place where we're going to meet that night, a Muslim holy place. And we're going to meet this man. This man passed on in 1999, my spiritual teacher, Muhammad Safir Effendi Al-Jarahi. When I went inside there, my wife and I were completely confused. This was post-Gulf War. As we know, the Gulf War polarized nations and civilizations. There was a perception that East and West were against each other. Samuel Hunter spoke of the clash of civilizations. We spoke about Christians and Jews and Muslims all at loggerheads with each other. And coming from an apartheid South Africa didn't help at all. But coming to that place, I was stunned. I saw Christians, Jews, Hindus, Muslims, even those who say they don't believe in any God, all working together in a very harmonious way. And when I looked at the teacher, he saw the confusion in my face. He said, what do you see? I said, I can't understand. We fought each other in so many different countries. How come we're all in the same place and we're not fighting? He said, my son, mankind is one single nation. The God of all mankind is one. We just call him by different names. The bad behavior or unacceptable behavior of a small group of people is not indicative of an entire nation, religion, or country. He went on to say that any spiritual teacher, in spite of his external paraphernalia, be he rabbi, imam, sheikh, pastor, priest, pundit, it doesn't matter. If that man promotes terrorism, violence, extremism, conflict, the taking of life, that man is not a man of God. Don't follow him. Any person who promotes love, kindness, compassion, and mercy, he is a man of God. Follow him. I looked at that. I saw the people that night, and something in my heart told me, I want to come back here. It happened. 6th August 1992. It was a Thursday night. I walked in again. Spiritual teacher saw me again. Now the confusion was gone. He looked at me at 10 p.m. In Islamic culture, Thursday night is beginning of Friday. Islamic day starts on Thursday after sunset. We follow that calendar. It was 10 o'clock at night because Thursday is very important to us. This is a Sufi place. It's one branch of Islam. And in the Sufi place, they start chanting the names of God Almighty in Arabic. In the Bible and in other books, you will know it as the self-sustaining, the one and only, the eternal, the loving, the kind, the compassionate, the merciful, all those qualities of God Almighty. We chant them in Arabic. At the end of the chant, around 10 p.m., he's sitting in the corner of the room, I'm sitting on the side. He looks me straight in the eye. But I can see that whilst he's looking at me, he's connecting heavenward. And that's why I said, this is a spiritual organization. It was a spiritual instruction from a spiritual man that came to a divine command. And he says, in fluent Turkish. And I don't understand a word of Turkish. But I understood every single word that he said. But that's not normal. He said, my son, I'm not asking you. I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin. Translated means gift of the givers. You will serve all people of all races, of all religions, of all colors, of all cultures, of all classes, of any geographic location and of any political affiliation. But you will serve them unconditionally. You will not expect anything in return, not even a thank you. In fact, in what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, expect to get a kick up your back. If you don't get a kick up your back, regard it as a bonus. Serve people with love, kindness, compassion, and mercy. And remember, especially you guys doing the MBA, the dignity of man is foremost. When somebody is down, don't be like the bank and then take the umbrella away. Make sure that you look after the dignity of people. When somebody's down on the ground, lift them, hold them, and pick them up. Wipe the tear of a grieving child. It's free. Doesn't cost anything. Caress the head of an orphan. Say words of good counsel to a widow. Be honest in everything that you do. Clothe the naked, feed the hungry, and provide water to the thirsty. And in everything that you do, he told me, be the best at what you do. Not because of ego. Oh, I'm the guy. No. You do it because you're dealing with human emotion, human feeling, human dignity, and human life. For you to understand that more tangibly, put yourself on the other side. Be a refugee in your mind. And understand then, how would you want somebody to treat you when they come to bring you? Do you want torn clothes? Do you want blown up cans of food? Do you want expired medicines? Or do you want to be treated as a proper human being? If you can understand that, apply it in your business. And you will know then how to treat people with dignity. Be the best at what you are, because you're dealing with human life. He went on to say, in Arabic, خَيْرُ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَنْفَعُ النَّاسِ. Best among people are those who benefit mankind. He said it three times. He didn't say Muslim, but he didn't say Indian, he didn't say Arab. He said, best among people are those who benefit mankind unconditionally. He said, now go back to South Africa and remember that whatever you do is done through you and not by you. I'm a living proof, 25 years now, that the kind of things that I do are not humanly possible. Don't think you're an MBA student, you're very clever that you got here. I'm very blunt, sorry. You are here purely by the grace of God Almighty. He can take it away with one single accident, a stroke, brain damage, loss of speech, loss of hearing in a split second when you think I'm the I. The more gratitude you give, the more you will prosper, the more you will grow. But it will not come without challenges. Because challenges is put in front of man, that's what makes us grow and find solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to be the best. Everything comes to us. He then told me, now go. For the rest of your life, you will know what to do. Believe me, in every aspect, in every field, I do know what to do. Not because of me, because of a spiritual force that comes and guides you in every part. I'll show you as we go along with some of the slides. Everything is shown to you. And at one point I asked him, I've been to Turkey 22 times. I asked him, my teacher, how come when you speak Turkish, I understand, but when somebody else speaks Turkish, I don't understand one word? He says, my son, when the hearts connect and the souls connect, the words make meaning because of the heart and the soul connecting. It's a spiritual gift. There is a thing of spirituality. People say they don't believe, they're really losing out something. But we don't impose belief on everyone. Belief is free will. It's free choice. It has to come from inside yourself. Instantly I got home, we got involved in the war in Bosnia. It came, get involved. Not a feeding scheme, or a food parcel, or a blanket. The organizations are not formed. What craziness, the first thing we get involved is in the war. In Eastern Europe, 1992, University of Sarajevo, totally destroyed. We go in, we take in 31 containers of food aid. August 92, the same month. 3 months later in November, I go back. But before I go back, I'm in Johannesburg. I'm at an arms corps show. I see in containers a theater, a sterilization unit, and an X-ray, both the arms corps, X-ray unit. And this is implanted in the mind. November, I go to Bosnia. I take in 8 containers. When I say I, it means with me. 8 containers of aid. It's winter. The chill factor is minus 21 degrees. There is no heating, no gas, no electricity. If they had ESCOM, it would make no difference. No blankets, no roof, no window, no doors. They're bleeding, they're infected. Hypothermia, people die from that. So we took in an appropriate intervention. 8 containers of winter items, jackets, tents, blankets. At that point, when I saw the destruction all over Bosnia, I told them, and I don't know why I said this, do you want a hospital in containers? So they asked me, what's that? I said, even I don't know. Sorry, I've got a phlegm for a whole year. I said, even I don't know what's that. But the thought was implanted in my head. I came back and I found the company. On the road when you drive, most of these trailers, you'll see at the bottom says Efrat. Efrat for the Vietnam engineering were the people I contacted. But why did I contact them? Would I have gone to an Afrikaner? Would I have gone to a white guy? Would I have gone to a Christian because of apartheid South Africa? The answer is no, I would not have gone. But because the spiritual teacher showed me that human beings are all equal, don't put people in boxes because of a particular color, a religion, or a way of life. There are good people amongst everyone. So I met him, and I'll explain to you why, how this developed. They came to my house in February 1993. I said, Johan, we're going to sit and design the world's first containerized mobile hospital. We don't believe in ourselves, do we? We don't believe in ourselves. But South African engineering designed the world's first containerized mobile hospital. Delivered to the port of Trieste in Italy. A product of engineers and skills that have come from all our 26 universities in this country. And we achieved that. And where did we take a hospital from Africa? We took it to Europe. The continents who say that we are begging bowl, that we don't have skill. Yet they want our doctors, they want our engineers, They want our nurses, our teachers and accountants. Why come to the stupid continent? Now somebody calls us a shithole. The ambulance and everything was carried on the SAS Otaniqua. If I have to give you a story, the spiritual story behind this, we don't have the time. But there is a spiritual story behind this also. We took in the generator, the heaters. That's Johan, Gert, and me when I was much older in those days. That's the theater unit. That's Glenn Baird, the South African ambassador to Italy. Another view of the theater, sterilization unit, X-ray unit. Now, 20 years ago, when you went for X-ray, you saw the guys walking around with aprons everywhere, both the aprons. They don't want radium to go through them. How thick is a shipping container? It's a thin-walled shipping container. If you take radium through it, it'll penetrate the walls and cause cancer on the outside. South African engineering. We built lead into the walls of the container. What's the point of an X-ray machine if you can't develop the film? So you put a dark room in the back. What's the point of a dark room if you don't have the X-ray film and the powder? So we took 28 containers of state-of-the-art medical equipment, but 10 containers of backup supplies. Sutures, IV fluids, medicines, X-ray films, everything, a generator and fuel to run a hospital for a whole year, 1 year. So if they bomb us, close the roads, close everything, you will still be able to see patients for 1 year. MBA, it's about planning, forward planning, looking at the options, thinking of the possibilities. You have to apply your mind in what this business. In my life, if I make a mistake, people die. Incubators, orthopedic unit, burns unit, dental unit, outpatient unit, admin unit, and the warehouse, underground warehouse where we put it. 2005, before that, in 94, CNN filmed the hospital. The CNN commentator said, the South African container hospital is equal to any of the best hospitals in Europe. He was not comparing a container hospital from Africa to container hospitals in Europe. Because there are no container hospitals in Europe. He was comparing it to proper hospitals. It shows the quality, the caliber of our students and our engineers and our people in this country. But we don't believe in that. We all want to run away. In 2005, I was invited by the Bosnian government to come as their guest. They said 12 years later, we know it's 12 years later, but we like to show gratitude. I said, you don't have to do that. They said, if you don't come, we'll feel insulted. I went back. Before I left, I told the doctor in charge of the hospital, when the war is over, break the containers, take the equipment out, and put it in a more central place. It's feasible to use it like that. The war is over. When I get back in 2005, that's exactly what they did. They broke the containers, they put the equipment in the military barracks, which became the biggest hospital in the region. He tells me, my friend, remember in 93 you told me that we can do everything besides heart surgery in this theater? I said, yes, that's what I told you. He says, meet this lady, and brings the lady to me. He said, you see this lady? She had shrapnel in her heart. We removed the shrapnel in her heart from this theater, in this hospital, in the war that you South Africans provided. Then he said, you see these four children? These four children were born to this lady after the shackles were removed in the same hospital that you South Africans provided. That's why the Bosnian president called you to say that South Africans are identified with giving life. But do we understand that? We fight with each other every day. We fight with each other the whole year. Why do we only excel in situations like this? Or when the Rugby World Cup comes and Mandela wears a shirt and Francois Pienaar stands out? Or the World Cup where we don't even make it to the other rounds, but we still stood behind the team. Why do we do that? Why do we have this racist mentality or just prejudice against each other? We need to take the box out and look at this human being as a human being. Because if somebody is anybody's blood blue yet? Or green or white? The blood is the same. The pain is the same. The anxiety is the same. The anger is the same. The emotion is the same. The needs are the same. We are one nation. We need to understand that we need to stand together. So he calls us and we go back. 2004, I finally got to Cape Town. But the moment I walked in, boom, the news, tsunami hits 13 countries in the Indian Ocean. Thailand, Indonesia, Burma, India, a whole lot of countries. India says we don't want any help. Everybody runs to Thailand, Indonesia, because all the MBA students, all the big economic countries have their factories in Indonesia and they go for the past time in Thailand. So they run there first. They forget about the poorer countries. Africa got hit in a place called Hafun. I'll explain to them just now. Sri Lanka got hit. The Sri Lankan president comes on TV and says, we don't know what to do. 26 December, my team had just landed in Dubai. They were about to go to India. I have this information. A tsunami has hit. Sri Lanka doesn't know what to do. You don't sit with that information. And like the guy said, go put it in the cupboard. Doesn't help. You take that information and you use it. I stopped my teams. I said, you are diverted. You are flying to Sri Lanka right now. And they moved to Sri Lanka. We were the first team in the world that responded to the tsunami in Sri Lanka. The president at that time was Chandrika Kumaratunga. Ships, trains, houses, everything was blown apart. Moved away kilometers by the sheer force of the tsunami. We partnered, we were the first people that met the president within 48 hours. And we partnered businesses. This is your role again, your social responsibility. As part when you go into the big companies, don't forget that. But then I'll remind you. We partnered with companies and within 5 days, we delivered 7 million rand worth of aid. We hired planes, flew medicines over blown up bridges. When I say blown up, I don't mean by war, I mean by tsunami, by weather. Over bridges to areas that were not passable. We took in water, food, dishes, clothing, medicines, and all kinds of things. We were the first agency in the world given land by the Sri Lankan president, and we were the first agency in the world that built a housing village in Sri Lanka. All from South Africa. Who says it can't be done? But I told you, a place called Hafun was affected. Hafun is on the east coast of Somalia, across the border from Yemen. Very small population. The tsunami came. Actually, you could feel a tsunami in Cape Town too. Everybody who was on the coast that day could feel the water was very unsettled. The waves were very high. It was disturbance everywhere. You could feel that. Kenya was also affected. But Hafun, the tsunami came, wiped out all the houses. We decided to respond. But how do you respond to Somalia? There's no organized government. There's security concerns. There's no communication networks, proper networks. How do you work out logistics? There's no proper runways. Hafun is a place out of hell. You have to go to Bosaso. You can't go to Hafun. What do? You hire an illusion, a Russian aircraft. In the back, you can see it's first class. You're very relaxed. You don't need seat belts. You can play volleyball. Nobody's going to tell you fasten seat belt. You have a lovely time. The problem is the illusion cannot land in Bosaso. The plane is too heavy. It's too big. And the runway is too short. So you have to make a plan. You change from the illusion and you stop in Uganda and you transfer all the goods into two Antonovs. Antonov is a smaller plane. It can land in Bosaso. It's not too heavy. The runway is ideal. There's only one small problem. You can't sit in the cargo hold like an illusion. Because if you sit there, in 10 minutes you'll be dead. There's no oxygen control. But as they say, die boer maak 'n plan. 17 of us sat in the cockpit with the pilot. Below him, behind him, and above him. And we fly to Bosaso. And as we get to Bosaso, the pilot says, shit. So I said, now what's the problem? He said they made a mistake, the runway is 300 meters too short. Boom, he just brings the plane right down. And we fly all over in the cockpit. But you see, advanced thinking. Who did I take to fly the plane? I took Russian fighter pilots. So Putin is very happy with me. I know maybe I'll sign a nuclear deal. The plane stops just short of the runway. The journey is not over yet. We have to take the truck to go 400 kilometers where there's no road. 16 hours across the grass and the bush. We come to the Hafun, but you have to wait for the sea tide to recede. When the sea tide recedes, then you get across and you deliver the goods. All the boats are destroyed, all the fishing nets are destroyed. From then up to today, we put in boats, we put in fishing nets. It's about sustainability. It's about self-sufficiency. It's about catching the fish and having protein to eat and to sell and to trade. It's to make human beings independent. And to have to give them dignity and self-worth. This was the first time in our history in 2004, we were one notch higher. In 1993, we delivered the hospital, but we didn't have a medical team. We went to Sri Lanka, we didn't have a medical team. But in 2004, for the first time, we added a medical team in our history. And this was a primary healthcare team, pediatrician, and thereafter we built a medical center in Hafun. It's still running up to today. We supply medicines, medical staff, equipment, the patients, and the patient population has grown because from Mogadishu, they're all coming to the north. Whilst I was in Turkey, in 2005, on the way back from Bosnia, we saw pictures on the screen of the famine in Niger. Our agencies did not pick it up. Our media did not pick it up. Everybody was sleeping while African children were dying. We called the embassy for international relations. I have a very good relationship with international relations. And I said, I need diplomatic support. We need to get to Niger. They say we don't have an embassy. The closest one is Ivory Coast. So I said, but it has to be done. It was taking time. Whenever you land a plane, you have to clear it with civil aviation. So we called civil aviation in Niger. And we asked the guy, what's the conditions like? He said, children are dying in the thousands. Can we come? He said, please come. So we go to our first class, business class plane. And we fly in the middle of the night. We land in Niger at 2 o'clock in the morning. I get out of the plane. The guy we spoke to is a guy called Mukhtar. I said, is it Mukhtar here? He comes, yeah, me, Mukhtar, I'm here. I said, Mukhtar, I got one small problem. He said, what's the problem? I said, we don't have visas. He said, my brother, this is Africa. Anything is possible. He brings a stamp and he stamps all the passports. He says, your visa given. I said, now we need a hotel. He said, we got Intercontinental, not the European one. Very different. Then I said, we need transport. He brings broken down cars, cracked windscreen, flat tire. I wouldn't trade that for any German expensive car. You know why? Because it was brought with love. It was brought with heart. It was brought with gratitude. Not that we wanted gratitude. And it was brought with spirituality. We go to the hotel. I tell him, Mukhtar, my team's hungry. 4 o'clock in the morning, the cook came walking. No car, no bicycle. Came walking with the pot in his hand. And he cooked for a meal that everybody could eat your fingers because it was cooked with love. I said, Mukhtar, I have one more request. I need to speak to the president of the country. He said, didn't I tell you this is Africa? The owner of the hotel is a friend of the president. So we speak to the president. I said, I need somebody from your office, not you personally, just to receive us because the South African media is here. He said, fine. I need trucks, I need minibuses, I need warehouses, I need staff, and I need to know one important thing. Not, you see, we are very clever South Africans. We come from Northwest University, we're very sharp. We come from WITS and UCT and Pretoria. We're great people, we can do anything. You never say that. You said, Mr. President, we are here as your African brothers. We're here to see how we can fit into your program. Where do you want us to assist our brothers and sisters? He said, my friend, I need you in Tel Abari. Everything will be made available for you. In 3 hours, they will come. You think of African time. It doesn't mean 3 hours, it doesn't mean 30 hours. In less than 3 hours, he was there. The lady next to me is the president's personal advisor. The three people next to her are ministers, and the guys next to her are directors general. We're not a government. We don't even have an embassy in Niger. But the respect they afforded us, because fellow Africans came to help Africans. They gave us the trucks, the laborers, the warehouses, and the minibuses. That's not the desert. That's a river. Cape Town's going the same way. That's the animals. Northern Cape has already suffered that. Thousands of animals have died. Like this, because of the drought. That's the people. I told him we're here for free service. He said we need to announce it. They announced it in 42 degree heat, 15,000 people turned up. I had 7 doctors. I went through the crowds, 2 things stood out. 1, no adult males. 2, still on the point 1. No adult males, no teenagers, no big kids, no mothers asked for help. That is the spirituality of Africa, which we don't see. And after that I said, the quiet dignity of the people of Africa. They smile, they sit in patience, that we saved this child, and we saved every single child. And you know why? Because they walked out of the queue. They made it easy for us to see those that were really sick, so we could save them. When we talk about religion, when we talk about faith, do we really believe? Can any of us do that with our children? Ask yourself and answer that question honestly before we profess to be these great spiritual people. Ask that question. If you can answer it honestly, you know this is what the people of Niger went through. The same year, October 8, 2005, earthquake hits Pakistan. This is a massive earthquake. Why is it massive? An earthquake strikes one city. This earthquake wiped out the entire northwestern region from Rawalpindi to the India border. Everything. 400 villages on the way, everything sank into the ground. There, the Twin Towers of Islamabad. That Prem doesn't know there's another Twin Towers. Destruction in the mountain. We land in Rawalpindi. The Pakistani military comes to us. Now you think the Afrikaners are cramped. Whew, you haven't met the Pakistani military yet. Flowers! Don't take it seriously. Yeah. We meet the Pakistan military. Generals come to me. He says, my friend, I don't know you, but your South African government has recommended you. Do you mind not going to the earthquake? So I said, that's fine. So my team said, what did you come for? I said, wait. I tell the man, which hospital are you giving me? So he says, you understand? I said, of course I understand. So they asked, what is he saying? I said, what this guy is telling you, that there's nothing left there on the mountains. Everybody's dead. The hospitals are gone. The politicians are gone. That we don't worry about too much. The other guys are gone, and there's no equipment, nothing. You can't do anything there. So I said, okay, which hospital you give me? But I need to take my teams to the mountain to stabilize those that are alive. He said, all the helicopters are gone. Now the first secretary of the South African embassy is with me. The Americans are there. This is the helicopters. So he said, maybe we need to speak to them. I said, my friend, if you're going to write to them, it's going to take 3 years. It's not going to work. We need to get it now. I said, leave this to me. So I walk around, I see a big black guy, American soldier. I said, my friend, you're from America? He says, yes, I'm from America. I said, but first you're from Africa. He said, yes, first I'm from Africa. So I said, me also, I'm from Africa. I got a small problem, I need a helicopter. He said, Amni. I said, what can you give me? He said, take 2 minutes, I got 3 helicopters. Black Hawk, 2 Black Hawks, and another one. We put our teams, we send them to the mountain to stabilize the patients. We come to this hospital. It was Cantonment Hospital of Rawalpindi given to us. When you're walking, you know we complain too much. We complain a little too much. When you walk into the hospital, there's a child that's lying on the stretcher for 3 days with a smell of gangrene. No drip, no medicines, no food, no parents, an orphan. No medical care. And patients lying all over the hospital, the stink of gangrene all over the hospital. No proper nursing care, no facilities. So I go back to the military guy. I said, is this an organized killing field? Will you bring your mother here? So he says, what do you mean? So he comes with me. He puts his head down in shame. I said, what happened? The superintendent says, we're about to shut this hospital down. I said, you guys are crazy. There's nothing wrong with this hospital. So I said, I'm going to give you a shopping list. If you give me this, we'll show you what South Africans can do. In less than 24 hours, they brought the equipment. And the South African medical team converted the Pakistani hospital that was about to shut down into a 400-bed emergency hospital. And we did 75 operations a day because of skills acquired in this country. For that, the Pakistan president gave us a presidential award, the only agency in Africa to get that. It was indicative of our skills, amputations, big problem, not major equipment, but we did our job. This is a lovely story. You see, we have these racist tendencies. We go against each other. This lady's name is Karina Extien. She's an Afrikaner Christian from Pretoria University. Her specialty, spinal rehab. When does she decide to go to Pakistan? On Christmas. She gives up her Christmas with her family, her religious time, to be with Muslim country people in a Muslim country, to give social service. This is the quality and the caliber of the Ubuntu of our people. No race, no religion, no color, no geography. She goes and she does it. For 3 weeks, she gives that service to Muslim people as a Christian. And when she leaves, the patients cry, their families cry, the doctors cry, and even the military cries. because of what this lady did. A reflection of what we as South Africans again can do on the outside. Why can't we do it here? That is the question. And the change can only come from us, not from anybody else. This is the last story I'm going to give you, and then we can open it for questions. 12th of January 2010. I just walk into my house. I get a call from 7:02 at 6:10 in the morning. Have you heard? There's an earthquake in Haiti. So, I put the TV on, I look at the pictures, and I say to myself, in the space that I'm seeing on the screen, at least 25,000 people are dead. 250,000 people died in that earthquake. Pakistan was another milestone to us. Primary healthcare team in Somalia, trauma team we took to Pakistan. We had a new addition in 2010. For the first time, we had our own search and rescue team. The search and rescue team was headed by Ahmed Baam. Sitting here, Ahmed, stand up. Stand up, man. You're so short, they can't see you. And Mani House, you'll see them just now. Within 1 hour, the search and rescue team was ready. Within the next hour, the medical team was ready. We were ready to respond to the crisis. But now we had a choice. How do you go? Either through America or to France. Now going to America is going to be a big problem. The bigger the beard, the bigger the terrorist. So that's going to be a bigger problem. So it's a direct relationship mathematically. The longer the beard, the greater you are the terrorist. So if you have no beard, you are safe. So they said, no, that's not going to work. We're not going to go through. Hashim, I've got no chance of going to America. In any case, they don't play cricket there. And Trump has blocked all the Muslims from going there in any case too. So we said we're going to go to France. I phoned international relations, phoned the French government. The French consul said, please come, no problem. In 5 minutes, we get a Schengen visa. No form, no pictures. But you know what's the best part? It's free. We Indians, we like free things. So we get the visa. And then we said, okay, we'll give Air France the business. I tell Air France, we'll give you the business. Will you get my teams to Port-au-Prince? They said, yes. I said, the airport will close. They said, the airport is open. I said, it will close. They said, it's open. I said, you give me a guarantee in writing? They give me a guarantee in writing that I'll get my team support of Prince. I knew that's never going to happen. Anyway, I take the guarantee. My teams go. All the big Buddha guys, Ahmed and everybody, go to the airport and they leave. But I'm making arrangements now. Remember I told you it's about forward thinking. From Johannesburg, I found the Catholic Society in Joburg. I said, I need the Pope. The guy gets ice cold on the other side. Why does a Muslim guy want the Pope? I told him, I'm going to tell Osama bin Laden where he is. So the guy is a little stunned. I said, why do you need the Pope? How are we going to get hold of him? I said, aren't you Christian guys connected all over the world? We Muslims, we're connected everywhere. They said, okay, I'll get back to you in 3 hours. He said, what do you want? I said, I want a Catholic society to meet the South African team, not in Port-au-Prince, in Dominican Republic. 3 hours later, it's arranged. Catholic Relief Services, CRS, and Caritas will meet your team in Dominican Republic. Ahmed lands with the team in Paris. He said, you got a problem. I said, I know what you got a problem. He said, how do you know? I said, I'm sure the airport is closed. Yes, the airport is closed. In the meantime, I already spoke to Air France. I said, you see, you give me guarantee in writing, in email. You'll get my team support of Prince. Reroute my teams to Dominican Republic. They said, that's not a problem. I said, in 2 hours is your flight to Dominican Republic, change flights. They get there, they land in Dominican Republic. Caritas and CRS is waiting, South African team. Food, bottled water, hotel, food, everything arranged. The Caritas team, you see how important was that meeting with the spiritual teacher? You don't see race, you don't see religion, you don't see color, you don't see anything else. The teams now are mixed of all religions and they stay with the Catholic people in their compound. While the UN teams work 3 hours a day, the South African team with the Caritas people work 9 hours a day. They walk through the rubble everywhere. They make friends with the Mexican dog. He didn't speak English. Then, 20th January 2010, the most amazing thing happened. I'm speaking to Ahmed. He says, I have to go. 8 days after the earthquake, they hear sounds in the rubble. They go, for 3 hours they start searching, and 3 hours later, they pull out 64-year-old En-Azizi in the Catholic Church that had collapsed. No oxygen, no food, no medicines, no water, fractured hip. 8 days later, this lady survives because God willed her to live. And she lives and she comes out and she says to Ahmed and to Manikos, the first thing she tells him, there's Manikos, the tall one on that side. She tells him, I love God. You're instilling hope and faith in people several thousand kilometers away. And then she tells them, I love you. It was the world first for South Africa and for us. Nowhere in the history of the world has any African team taken anybody out of the rubble alive in an earthquake outside the African continent. We're the first to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to believe in yourselves. Then came the medical teams behind them. And when the French and the Americans came, they said, we can't work here. There's no machines, no CT scan, no X-ray, nothing is functional. My teams have an instruction the day they leave. The first thing they do, I tell them, take the Medicine Control Council book and throw it out of the window. Don't follow the rules. I said, if you follow the rules, you'll do nothing. In a disaster zone, if you don't do anything, guaranteed the patient is going to die. You guys are working outpatient casualty for so many years. You have to have gut feel about the situation. Do something. So my teams work, and the French and the Americans said, if you want life, if you want healing, if you want help, go to the dream team. And the dream team is from South Africa. And finally, the last story, the big paramedics went into the church. They washed the wall, they washed the floor, and then the patients came. They worked with the Mexican doctors. The child came. We were talking about ethics in the beginning. You see, I told you from the northern countries, they went and practiced their medicine on children from a poor country, and they didn't do the amputation correctly. So we had to recut the hand or the arm or the leg. Not one, hundreds of them. And when you finished, you tell the child, go home. And the child looks at you, go home where? No house, no parents, no grandparents, no family, no food, no clothes, no medicine. Where must I go? But you now robbed him of his hand and his arm because somebody came to practice. My team's witness, I won't say the name, important country in Europe. The guy's cut worked on the guy's leg. He died from bleeding. It's all about ethics. And the other important part of ethics, do you know why 250,000 people died? Because the architect passed the plan incorrectly. The engineer schemed the structure. So when one building fell, they all went boom, like a pack of cards. But one day it will come back to you. It's not your child, it's not your wife, it's not your husband, so it doesn't matter. Let me make an extra buck and let somebody else die. Got nothing to do with me, but it always comes back. That's the law of life. Ladies and gentlemen, whatever you do in the business world, excel, be the best, but don't forget your humanity and your compassion. We've made the greatest advances in science, in technology, in every aspect of the world, but we are 400 years back when it comes to morality, human relations, friction, and discord. We've gone back to the dark ages. We need to change that. We need to believe, but we more than believe, we need to have humanity in us. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to be here.